Okay.
Ow! 212-470. Hopefully we can clear up that
Hello.
Background noise. Are you driving? Hi.
Actually, hi, how are you?
I'm blessed and favored.
Okay.
Thank you. Are you driving?
That's a fuselage. Actually, no, I'm not driving. I'm actually kind of I'm stationary.
Okay, awesome. All right, Jeff, so I'm going to fall back.
I'm not getting any feedback from him.
Okay.
I'm not getting any feedback.
Yes, sir. And I'll look for the other number and text you.
All right. Good, sir. Please tell us who you are and what you do.
So my name is Maurice Green, Dr. Maurice Green. I am the founding managing director of one of the largest organizations of black PhDs in the country called the Black PhD Network that has about 34,000 members worldwide, representing most academic institutions in the country and just about every possible academic discipline from linguistic anthropology to artificial intelligence. I myself am a critical criminologist, and my area of expertise is black male identity and resilience. And I'm very, very happy to be in the presence of such an intellectual giant as our very own Judge Joe Brown.
And how old are you, sir?
I'm 42.
All right. Right there, good, solid in the middle. You have reached that magic age of 40 for men. And everybody that has reached that age, they know what I'm talking about. Everything still works fine. All of it has come together, and you have your credentials, you have your talents, you have your skills, and it goes up from there like a rocket. Where'd you come
right.
from?
Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. Grew up, my own full narrative is that that's relatively consistent of most black people in this American experience. I grew up in the projects of Brooklyn, New York, single-parent household, and have worked very hard and through, obviously, the blessings of the Lord and so many supporters in my own personal network and family have been able to accomplish a few things by the grace of God.
Did you play any ball?
Well, actually, no, my sport. My sport was gymnastics, actually. I competed in high school gymnastics and went to the University of Oklahoma for a couple of years to pursue that and then decided and was led in another direction.
Okay. Now, you like the ladies, I take it.
you would definitely say that. I like the ladies.
Okay. It's all right. We got everything going. I already know some of the answers, but this is for
right.
the edification of our listeners. Now,
okay.
You and I and our other guests, and I'll let him introduce himself, we've embarked on a project, and that is to take an old phrase that I got, which was old when I got it 55 years ago, and we're going to man things up. Why do you think it's important to man up the population?
I think, well, in my own personal opinion, I think that it's quite obvious that, particularly in our culture, that the what people refer to as the feminization of black masculinity, I think is something that we have to really take a look at. I think we have to be able to define, I would say redefine, but define manhood in a way that it's not being presented now. I think that we live in a time where definitions are being made for us, right? People are feeling more and more comfortable explaining what we should be or what we should be doing. And the definitions of who we are as a people or as men has been unfortunately taken out of our hands, right? So we are subject to the ideological positionalities of people that know nothing about us other than the fact that they want to control our behaviors, our ways of being, and our identities.
They don't seem to have much concept of themselves either, do they?
I think that's a challenge. That's a challenge for some of them.
I believe the three of us have been talking about they hate what they are and they hate what they want to be. They hate themselves, but yet they're trying to set the table for all of us. It's got to sort of look, man, you don't even know who you are. So how are you going to sit there and tell everybody else what they're supposed to be? And you got a guilt trip going and coming on what you're all about.
Right.
Your problem.
Right. 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 I think that's something that obviously we need to deal with. That we need to take the reins of defining ourselves, defining what it means to be who we are and who we have always been. Right. So I think that's one of the things that we were discussing. Right. That particularly, I mean, my area that I spent a lot of time working is specifically Black men and boys. Right. So if you look at the narrative presented, right, the imageries presented about what it means to be a Black boy. Right. These reoccurring narratives of whether we're talking about hypersexuality or violence or ignorance. Right. Ignorance is something that we're facing as a people, right? One of the things that we talked about is what's termed like anti-intellectualism, right? So, in essence, they start to and this is not anything new, Judge. Like back in the day when you had the kids that were considered nerds, right, or the squares, or they were people tried to look down upon them because they were highly educated, highly credentialed. They studied a lot and you're not the cool kid. That thing is kind of permeated in our society even now, right? So if you're an athlete, that's great, right? And we're going to hear about you. If you're a rapper or a singer, that's great. And that's going to be promoted and we're going to hear about you. But if you go to school and you're studying computer science and you're, accomplishing academically, that's not highlighted. That's not presented as something that we should either aspire to or achieve. And that has ramifications in the psyche of our people and our children, right? That if I want notoriety, if I want popularity, if I want to be supported and encouraged, I need to do one of these things. It's the whole internet generation. Right, where you have brilliant people, say, on Instagram giving brilliant commentary or great information, and they got 2.5 followers. But if a man or a woman takes their clothes off, right, if they take their clothes off, if they act in ways that are, I guess at this point we don't even know if there's a such thing in this society as unacceptable or immoral or anything like that. But if you take your clothes off, now you got 500,000 followers. So there's this positive reinforcement for behaviors that aren't conducive to the successful achieving of our people, supporting of our people, right? And so I think that's obviously one of the many things that we were talking about. Like, we've got to take control over what we determine we are, how we move, what's cool to us, what's hot to us, what's important to us, instead of letting the people on the outside dictate to us what we should support, what we should glorify as a people. So that's one of the many things that we've discussed.
That's an interesting one. That leads to all kinds of interesting places. That leads to all sorts of interesting develops. Like, how often... Yeah, man, we need some Black enterprise, man. We got to get it together, man, so we can get some land, man. When we get some land, man, we got to start growing crops, man. Like, okay. So what are we supposed to do, man? Jump back into the last ice age and come back out of it again so we can go Neolithic this shit one more time? I mean, they've already been that 10, 12,000 years ago. Aren't you kind of behind the times? And what are you going to do to be able to jumpstart that? Do you know anything about it? Well, no, man. Land is basic, man, and they're fraudulent on everybody, man. We're talking about they got off the gold standard, man. That's when they, oh, come on, dude.
Right, right.
See,
right.
We get right. that, and what do you get? Ignorance. Oh, let
right.
me be more candid. With us, it's not ignorance. Ignorance is simply the lack of knowledge and information that can be banished by the acquisition of information, facts, and details. I think we have a congenital condition known as ignorance, as distinguished from ignorance. That boy
ignorant.
Be ignorant.
And
you see, you know, something else that black folk keep forgetting about?
Talk about it.
They have leadership within their race. You have Albert Einstein, for example, Fermi, and this, that, and the other people.
Mm-hmm.
They even have Revenge of the Nerds.
Right.
Do we have any black myth? Superman? No. Did we ideate upon? No.
Right.
So what do we
right.
have? Hey, man, you know, like I got me some bees nose, man, and we moving much merchandise, man. You know, they takes care of me. Wait.
Right.
That's not an image. It's just
right.
stuck on your own damn stupid. Where you trying to get out there? You trying to appropriate some small portion of the talent somebody may have and exploit it. That's wrong. Because that's not what it's supposed to be about. So tell me how we move to this well-rounded thing. Well, one point that we need to understand is when we talk about the diversity of other races and ethnicities in what their leadership does, how come we can't even conceive of a smart gangster that's black? You know, or a smart warrior who's black? They all have to be stupid in the current mob. Like, what are you doing? See, they try to break it down into, instead of having a Renaissance man, who is knowledgeable, he's a warrior, he's got integrity, he can figure something out, he knows math, you know, he can understand engineer.
Mm-hmm.
He's a centurion, a tribunal. In Rome, you had these people who crossed all of the borders. They could do a lot of things. We just have for the stuff on stupid. Or, well, pimp with new terminology for what he's
right.
doing. That doesn't work,
right.
man.
Right. No, absolutely not, Judge. Absolutely not.
What do you think we have to do about this?
It's a lot, Judge. You give me a lot. You give me a whole meal here. Okay. So I think, first of all, I think we have to become more familiar with the diversity of our blackness in terms of achievement, in terms of success stories, and not just something that we do on in February, the month that someone decided to give us, right? So I occupy a very unique positionality because I'm surrounded day in and day out by some of the most brilliant black people in the world and connected to some of the most brilliant black people in the world. And these are the kinds of black people that are, like I said, are not promoted, right? That are not talked about, that are not presented as viable options for our people to ascribe to, right? So there are incredibly talented, gifted, highly intellectual, intelligent, hardworking, committed black people all over the country, all over the world. And I think that we have to get to the point where, since it's not being presented as the norm, right, since it's not in mainstream media, right, it's something that people talk about once a year, we have to do our due diligence and look and find these people, right, find our people that are doing incredible things, right? And I think the connection point or the connectivity, right, is what's the most relevant part of it, right, so that we're not only finding them, but we're connecting to them. We're asking questions. We're asking, how can we help? How can we, you know, move the needle forward for our people, right? And that, I think, is one of the primary ways that we can start to really shift the experiences of our people in this country. The diversity of our intellectual capital, I think, is something that we really need to delve into. And that's one of the things, like you said, that we were talking about, our ability to come together, to share, and to do the work, right? To do the work. And again, as long as we continue to operate in the silos of our specific areas of expertise, right? Or our, you know, I work my job, you do yours, you know, my four and no more kind of mentality, we'll get nowhere. But when we start connecting the dots, we can really start shifting things in a way that can change our people's lives forever. So I think, again, one of the important points is for us to connect and not just to talk, right? And the other thing that we talked about, and we'll just kind of brush over it gently, right? Everybody in the world has to know what everything that's going on. Right, what everybody's working on in terms of how we can do this, right? I think we know that the more noise you make sometimes, the more difficult it becomes to do the things you're trying to do. So I think that's an important thing for us to continue.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Right. And stop glorifying ignorance, 40. Right? And that's the other thing. And that's not to be bourgeois.
Let's see if right, we can just stop. Let's stop before we try to knock somebody else off. What's your opinion on this issue of the black man in America getting together with black men in the rest of the world?
Oh,
I
gosh.
See what's going on. My signal's over here at my house. It's going from four bars down to a dot. And I have all this Wi-Fi stuff up in here I paid a lot of money for, and it always does these strange things when something
right.
might be
around
said. Yes. Now,
so
now
I think
doesn't make any difference.
Right. In theory, it's an incredible opportunity. So Judge,
Snoopin.
In theory,
tell us about
I think in theory it's great. I think so there's two ways of looking at it, right? In theory, it's an incredible thing, right? Because the experiences, the oppression, the difficulties associated with black maleness is not limited to the American experience. That notwithstanding, there is a lot of repair work that black men in America need to do to offset the reputation that has been presented to the world about us, right? Because it's been my personal experiences where we have some of our black brothers that come over from other countries that have very negative views about black Americans, right? And, you know, it's not necessarily their own fault, right? Because the propaganda narratives that have been presented about black men in America are so complete, right? So consistent and persistent that people come over with preconceived notions about what it means to be a black American man, right? And even if they don't come over, even in their own countries, what the presentation of our black masculinity, our black American masculinity, is very, very myopically simple. We are allegedly, right, supposedly dangerous, ignorant, hypersexual, lazy, like, and this is not something that they're not aware of. Like, the messaging has been very, very, very effective. So I think, again, in theory, yes, all black men coming together for the purpose of us being able to unite and to strengthen our people and protect our families and our children and to build industries and economy, that's great. But black men in America really need to do some heavy lifting as it relates to fighting against the narrative of who they say we are and doing it, as they say, in word and in deed, right? Because like you were just saying a minute ago, everybody's talking, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to water and we need to get into this industry. And then you ask them, well, how? Like, what's the business plan? What's the model that we're going to use? And it's like, there's not that underpinning of the skill sets, information, or tools to manifest the conversation into a reality, right? So I think black men in America, and honestly, you know, some of the things that they present, we have to answer for, right? You know, as a criminologist, one of the things that they talk about, right? It's black on black crime. Now, this idea theoretically, right, it's problematic because when they say black on black crime, they make it sound like it's unique to black people. So there's something special about a black person killing a black person, like there's something really wrong with, you know, that action. When at this point, most people know that black on black crime is simply proximity, right? You hurt or you commit crimes against whoever's closest to you. And since black people live together, if we're going to commit a crime, it's going to be against someone. The same way white people commit crimes against white people, Asian people commit violence against Asian people, Hispanic people, right? So the truth be told, you know, that there's been such a strong pushback against the idea of black-on-black crime. Oh, you can't say that. You can't say that. That's wrong. That's just a misrepresentation, and they do that dance. But we've got to really settle down as black men and say, no, wait a minute now. Pookie did shoot Tyrone, right? That actually did happen. And we as a people need to take responsibility. I'm talking about black men specifically. We need to take responsibility for these young men that are in our community that have no guidance, no mentors, and no concept of guidance, right? Because they've been told that they're men. You a man, you know, you 14, you a man, right? You 17, you a man. Or you're having relations with women or girls and that makes you a man, right? So they've been so misguided that they actually think that they've achieved manhood. When we know that you're not a man until men say you a man. Like you've got to get around real men that can qualify you and guide you as to what it means to be a real man. And they don't have that, right? And at this point, they're not looking for it because it's, you know, it's difficult. It's hard, right? Becoming a man, that's hard. So people want to take the short route. They follow the narratives. I'm a man because I'm 18. I'm a man because I got a job. I'm a man because... And they go out all, like the old folks used to say, all willy-nilly, right? But we as black men have got to stand up and say, no, we need to take responsibility for this. And we need to move in ways and create structures to catch our lost boys, so to speak, and make it known that we're doing this. In that capacity, I think it's important to make sure people know black men are standing up all over the world, all over the country in this context, and saying, okay, you know what? Time out. This is going too far. Now what are we really going to do? And that doing and the creating of that doing is about the connection points that we were talking about earlier, that we need to find ways and create ways and avenues to connect and not let anybody tell us who our heroes are or who our leaders are, right? We're not going to accept who you tell us we should be listening to. And by the same token, tell us who we should not be listening to. Because that's a part of the game also.
All right. See, you keep up with some of this nonsense. It's like, why are the young black folk pushing this person? This one inflames people. Black women have always had a reputation for being beautiful, right? Sexy, smart, athletic. Is that what's being pushed now?
Judge, I'm sorry, your audio is muffled. Judge, can you correct your audio, please?
Well, there's nothing I can do to correct it. Other than
I just hear a lot of wind or something. Is that you?
I don't know why. No, it's not me. I'm inside my kitchen, and I turned
off
the fan.
Yeah, I'm not moving.
Okay.
So yeah,
all right,
they're applying this again. Thank you. Does this sound better? They might have stopped a little.
Much better. Much better. It went away.
Okay.
Thank
now.
You.
Okay. Where was I? All right. And I know they're doing this on purpose. Okay.
black women being pushed as strong, beautiful, and intelligent. And
and also icons of morality, you know? Sister,
ooh,
your mama saying,
girl,
come back down here. No, you're not going to do that, saying to a daughter or your sister. No. I'm wait till your father comes home and he hears about this. No. What you say? Oh, I forgot. Fathers are not coming home these days. Cause there aren't any around maybe these days. Okay. we have down or up. Oh, my goodness. Why did all of a sudden I think of very pretty Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl? And she had a little minor wardrobe malfunction that everybody raised hell about for so long. But then we have the hippo.
Wow.
The lizard down on the floor. The Staples slapping fat butt cheeks, greased down in oil, with an invisible dental floss G-string. And that's supposed to be shame-free expression. And no way that particular somebody looks anywhere near as good as Janet Jackson. Okay, I'm just using that as an example. But one's supposed to be, how dare he say anything about that? Well, you know, it's sort of like, okay, I appreciate that you got in a bad car wreck. And you lost half your jaw and most of your teeth, you know, but put your prostheses on, you know. Don't be running around trying to flash this stuff because it doesn't look good. I understand poor taste. So why is it that we want to say one's all right and the other one's not? Or is that just an excuse? It's an excuse. So you don't have to be what you should be. You don't have to be what you could be. You're supposed to be whatever you feel like you want to be, which is likely as not to be something reprehensible. So why even try any more? You see where this goes when you start asking the questions? You're running game. This is the same media that was jumping all over Janet Jackson for a microsecond wardrobe malfunction. They really didn't tell anything. But then again, this is not a wardrobe malfunction. This is some fool who has the obligations of celebrity status put on them, who got down on the floor of the basketball arena known as the Staples Center in downtown L.A. so she could slut all the way out. Now, that isn't necessarily anything that's actionable. It's just like, you know, I've never heard of such a thing to preachers, congressmen and the mayors and the other people used to say, this has got to stop here. We cannot have this kind of indecency. We cannot have this kind of thing that appeals to prurient interest. We can't let that happen. We need decency. Our young girls need role models to show that they are women of character, not go around trying to show that they're harlots with no standards. What's gone wrong here? See, but we don't want to get there because you just gave me the stage reaction. Oh, my God, how could he say that about beautiful so-and-so? All right, I know beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but come on now. We just can't have any old thing thrown at us, so in 10 years, all of the young black youth who aren't 3 and 4 and 5 years old now will be bamboozled into thinking something that is ugly in terms of behavior, if not the looks, is all of a sudden acceptable. No, it's not. Keep the clothes on. Scientifically, since we have all these PhDs, we will be accessing
evolution. So when I
is a bit
right. So when I think of,
then I'll turn it over. Let me put one more thing out on the floor.
Sure.
If it weren't for the fact that human beings had certain aspirations that are built into us, we'd still be looking like chimps and Australopithecines instead of modern-day man or woman. You get it? Hey, call the shot.
So when I look at first of all, I personally don't really watch like award shows and things like that. So I didn't see, you know, you hear about what the performances were like but I didn't see it myself and haven't gone through put the effort in to look it up to see what people are talking about, right? But when I look at what we do as a people, just I guess it's because of my orientation, right? Just as in black men and black boys, one of the things that I look at is the ways in which rap music, right? What's acceptable, what our men do, right? When we get up and they start rapping and they're talking about murder this, murder that, gun this, gun that, kill this, blow this person's head off, and all of these genocidal, homicidal lyrics presented as music and entertainment, right? And when you see what may not be a direct correlation, but then you see the spikes in violence in our community, gun violence, young people running around killing each other, shooting at random, shooting people, killing little children, killing grandma, old women, just shooting like they have no sense. And when I see the glorification of this music, which is which we all should really think about, like it's genocidal music, homicidal lyrics and sounds, and it's exalted like, oh, this rap album was the best rap album, right? When it's talking about the, you know, some of the things that, you know, you say that Lizzo or whoever else was performing, and our young men get on here and talk about licking this and doing that, and in the ear gates of our children, right? My heart, mind, focus, right? Because I think for me, men have got to be accountable for men. And that's not to say that we can't formulate our ideas and opinions about what some women do or don't do, but I think black men have been so messy, right? And have allowed things to get so messy that we need to really spend time on looking at what we have created, manifested, and what we've allowed to infiltrate what they say is our culture, right? And I think that's a lie, right? I grew up with hip-hop. I grew up with music. I grew up with Fight the Power. I grew up, you know, and how that has become kill this dude, shoot this dude, murder this dude. So I think it's equally reprehensible for our young men to sit here and talk about the murder and pillaging of our own people, right? And glorifying that in a way that I think has a direct impact on the identity, belief systems, and actions of our young men, right? So I think, again, we have a lot of work to do, Judge, and I think we can do it. I think there's a will to do it. I think we have the talent pool to do it and the inspiration and potential to do that. But again, for me, you know, and as a criminologist, you hear about them, like, even in crime, you know, back in their rules, right? You don't, no women, no children, like there was some kind of moral code of behavior, right? And now we have a situation where there's no moral code. And it's our young men that are out there killing, like I heard one sister say, in essence, killing our own soldiers. Like, what kind of foolishness is that? So
that
again,
is an
like,
important
so,
point, and some people don't get that. That's a good point, sir.
You killing your own soldiers. You're depopulating your power structure, right? And people are paying you money to talk about it, right? They paying you money to talk about, I'm going to kill this and I'm going to destroy, I'm going to blow his head off. And word? See, now I grew up, like I said, I'm a kid from the projects, Brooklyn. I'm a project kid. I grew up around a lot. But back then there was some, you knew things that you couldn't do. Right? The old heads wouldn't let you do. Nobody would let you do. And now everything seems to be presented as okay. You know, you just do what you want to do. And I think, again, we get back to our ability to come together and have honest conversations about this. Because to be totally honest with you, Judge, I am less concerned with let me phrase this differently, because I am concerned with the language, the music, the hypersexuality of black womanhood and black girls that our young ladies are hearing and thinking that that's the thing to do. I am concerned about that, right? But I'm just equally concerned or more concerned about our black boys running out here talking about kill, murder, this, that, this N-word, and actually are inspired. And I'm not, again, not talking about a causal relationship. I'm not saying one causes the other. I'm talking about influences, right? Because we know music influence. You know, when you work out, if you listen to a certain kind of music, you feel inspired to go out and work a little harder, right? Now, if you listen to, I don't know, Kirk Franklin and whoever else is, whatever other gospel or artists out there, it makes you feel a certain way and subsequently can and not only influence your mood, but your behavior. Right? Generally, you don't think people are going out murdering and killing while listening to melodies from heaven. Like, it, I guess, I hope not, because then we got a whole other problem. But I, again, we have to take responsibility for this genocide music, for these homicidal.
Let me add something to you. Let me give you a little note.
Sure.
50-some years ago, I was an intern at a D.C. think tank. All right. One of my nastier assignments was to, along with another somebody or two, we had to go through the what we call slave pamphlets on microfilm in the Library of Congress. And from the early 1700s up until I think the last one that I read actually was published before the Civil War was over. And it said one of the most effective ways of enslaving the Negro population was to make the elements of slavery part of his culture. So
right.
Being a good product of his culture would cause him to be a good slave. And you're talking about the same thing 160 years later.
Yes.
Where,
yes.
While we would be, go kill your own. And by the way, let me give some people some thought on this too. I am a retired criminal court judge elected to 2 8-year terms here, 16 years worth of term, here in Memphis, Shelby County, Tennessee. And I still get the information. Now, what people ought to be really freaked out about is not just the gun killings, but the fact that the killings in total are ramping way up, and there are things like claw hammers. You know, everybody, you know, get the head of the nail to drive the claw. Put your knives, cut up the ribs, and slice up the shoulder for summer barbecue. Those instrumentalities are being used a lot more commonly than guns, but people don't get it served up to them in an act of
right. I mean, that's a
Something's
brilliant.
Gone
that's a
way
brilliant,
wrong.
Right. That's a brilliant connection, right? Because this is historical, right, Judge? So if you look
yes,
at what made a really good slave, right? A black man, you had to be strong, you had to be aggressive, right? You had to populate, you know, impregnate a lot of women for the purpose of creating more workers for the plantation. Now, even that behavior, right? And this is not to say that we blame all of what's going on with what has happened in the past, but there's a relationship, right? Where men have children that they don't have to take care of, or they don't feel like they have to take care of, or that they don't take care of. And if you correlate that with slavery, you had children that you didn't have to take care of because they were the plantation owner's property, right? That he sold. So it was your responsibility to impregnate, but not to take care of. And from a, you know, from a historical
Dr.
context,
Green?
That's yes, ma'am.
I just want to let you and Judge know that I just added Hakeem to the conversation, 510-646,
Doc.
And Mike is live.
Doc.
Hello,
all
gentlemen.
Right, doctor. How you doing, doctor?
I'm enjoying the conversation.
How much of it have you heard?
I've been on for since about 3-4 minutes now.
Oh, okay, well, you missed out on the couple of challenges where some things have gone wrong with transmissions that we are involved in that are strange, but typical. Yeah, we've been going there, and I was with Dr. Green, and I was saying, what have you have in any successful movements all through the world's history? Whether you're talking about alley-oop or you're talking about somebody else, you have warriors who are intelligent. All right?
Right.
But with us, you're supposed to be a big dummy and have no sense. And if you do, something's supposed to be wrong with you, which is a clip into black culture being essentially negative. Don't put strength, athletic prowess, your sport in there, what you can do in there, and make everybody well-rounded. What you do is you try to block everything off except what the person excels in, so there is no incentive to become a Renaissance person. And that's what I think is wrong. Not so much that we can play basketball or don't play basketball. Hell, to put a pistol in my head, to use the negative imagery we were talking about, and I couldn't sink a basket, I don't care what. Just go ahead and shoot me. I'm not going to be able to make it. Play football, all right, but, you know, that's like, what is it when they tell you when you're trying to train? Work on the skill sets that you're not good on, not just the ones that you already excel in. That way you won't advance much. But we've got
right.
a problem, Doc. We've got to take our black leadership and get it somewhere. Now, Dr. Green, can I?
Yes, sir.
Give our recent joinee the same thing that I gave you. Dr. Lucy, would you please tell us where you came from, what your background is, what your education
right.
is, and what you do to earn your living?
Yes, sir.
Get
yes,
him.
Sir. So I just came out with a book that goes through my history. It's my memoir. It's titled A Quantum Life, My Unlikely Journey from the Streets to the Stars. Now, when I say the street, I grew up in some of America's historic black communities. These include New Orleans, in particular New Orleans East and New Orleans Ninth Ward. My mother is a native of New Orleans East, and I was about the fourth generation of my family born there on my mother's side. My father is originally from rural Mississippi. Now, neither of my parents graduated high school. My father dropped out of school when he was 9 years old. My mother dropped out of school when she was 16 and old, pregnant with my older sister. My parents got married. I was born at the age of 4. They divorced. And for the next 10 years, I moved every single year and sometimes multiple years, multiple times a year. And they were the communities I mentioned, South Central, Houston Third Ward, Houston South Park, New Orleans Ninth Ward, New Orleans East, and rural Mississippi. So my dad's family were bootleggers. They sold illegal alcohol in dry counties of Mississippi. When my dad became an adult, he took the business to the next level. He started growing marijuana in Mississippi and selling it there, and he had a large import business in New Orleans. And so my father incorporated me into his business when I was 9 years old. So I'm talking about being left alone at home, and people coming to make their purchases of TJ Swan, Bumpy Head, you know, what we call Seagram's Gin, or Canadian Mist, or Nickel Bag or Dime Bag. I was the one that was transacting the business. And so, you know, the other thing that happened with me is that when I was 11, you know, this moving thing that I was talking about kind of came to a climax. And in a 16-month period, I lived in 9 different households and attended 5 different schools in 3 states. And, you know, I was out there by myself. So I had to learn to make it on my own, much like my father did. But, you know, I came of age in the 80s, the crack cocaine epidemic, right? So, you know, it was rough and rugged, just like it is now, if not even more so. And, you know, I learned that, you know, even though I'm a nice guy at heart, it's much better that I punch you in the face than you punch me in the face, right? So I began, you know, I had 1,000 fights. By the time I graduated high school, I literally, if I didn't have 100 fights, I'd be surprised. But ultimately what happened is I went to the military, came back, went to Tougaloo College, historically Black College in Mississippi, got myself into Stanford's PhD program in physics, and now I'm one of the most widely known physicists and astrophysicists in the world because I do a lot of television. And what I thought was
thank
you, sir. But one last thing I wanted to say is I thought that my Mississippi upbringing was my weak point that I wanted to hide because when I came into the world and classism was a thing in the world of science, I was like, oh, let me hide that. But it turns out that's my superpower, right? Being who I am and where I'm from and being authentically me is what allows me to connect with people.
Talk about it, bro.
I'm so proud of you. You came through the streets. But now what you're doing, roadmaps to get to the stars.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And building the craft.
Every time I hear some damn fool colored person talk about what we need to waste money on space program, see, they ain't even going to let no black folk go no way.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, don't you understand that some of the folk that hold the keys on the key ring are black folk that had life harder than you, fool?
I hope you're enjoying this big exclusive via the Judge Joe Brown Show. Don't forget to subscribe to this channel. Now, back to the show.
The show is sponsored by the Hurricane Reports, merchandise, and more.